This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, automotive aftermarket peoples in North America, Carm Capriotto, another Town Hall Academy from Remarkable Results Radio podcast. It's been the industry's only weekly single subject forum webinar in the automotive aftermarket. Don't take any substitutes for granted. Good to have you here. We're going to talk about tips. And we did three other podcasts. They may have been one of your favorites years ago. And it was Mr. Tom Hamm who said, Carm, we got to do another tips show. And I said, absolutely, Tom. So let's do that. So let me introduce my panel to you, Tom Hamm, AutoCentric Grand Rapids, Michigan. You all know Tom, great contributor to the show. And from Automotive Management Network, home of the Labor Tracker.
Yes, sir.
God, that is so cool. We did an episode on that, and I talked to Tom regularly, and he said it's going really well. So it doesn't expose your shop's name, but you can get an idea where labor rates are around the country and in your own marketplace. Jeff Grassman is here, Smart Automotive Service in Sumner, Washington. Hello, Jeff. Or is it proper to say Jeffrey?
It is not.
Okay, because we try to have it be informal here on the show.
I think we're good. Either one works great.
And I'm not sure if it's Russ or Russell. So I got, is it Russell?
Either way, I go by many different names, but Russ, Russell, I'm okay. Either way.
Russ Crosby, Russ's Wrench Auto Repair, Clinton, New Jersey. How is the weather for everybody? It's great here in the Buff and good for Tom. So it seems like we may be out of the winter doldrums. Hey, look, before we go on and talk about these great tips we're going to throw your way, I want to give a high five to our great, great sponsors. You know, when you work on your 15th Dodge Caravan, why do you have to enter the same information each time? With Shopware, never rewrite a service again. Just create a canned job and boom, yeah, get rolling right away on the web at getshopware.com. And with over 2,300 SKUs and 95% sales coverage on fuel pumps, Delphi has everything you need to replace your customer's fuel pump. From OEM quality pumps, modules, GDI pumps, and fuel tank cleaning supplies to instructional videos, they're the place. Get started at DelphiAftermarket.com. Hey, everyone, and the whole world is going to video. That's why we're there. You're going to see actually 80% or more of all the episodes that we do on video on our YouTube channel. We would love to have you be a subscriber. So look, 21 tips. A lot of these, all of Tom's tips came from the Automotive Management Network site where there's like 350 tips up there, Tom. So we're just kind of teasing people. They can go there and see so many other tips. The ones that Tom is bringing in his portion of the show all came from the website. So there's 21 of them. We're going to go in round robin order here. Just enjoy these, take notes and enjoy. Tom, shop photos. Let's talk.
You got photos out on the internet. And then the longer you've been around, you've been around 20, 30 years. There's photos out there, 20, 30 years old, old employees and your old shop and your old equipment and all kinds of stuff. And the photo quality wasn't that good. You're just surfing around someday and you notice that, huh, that doesn't look good. So I got a little reminder stuck in my calendar that pops up once a year. And it says, just go on those sites and see if there's any old photos that really shouldn't be there anymore. And we've got some nice new ones with our newer phones and photography stuff. And let's get some new fresh ones out there because this is our introduction to people for the first time, putting our best foot forward. You don't want some 20-year-old grainy photo of a, you know, an employee that you would never have working for you now being the first thing that they see. So take a look and just refresh that stuff once a year and just simple little inexpensive marketing tip help you out.
I also think, what if years ago you worked on like this very expensive classic car and maybe there's some value in bringing that back and you writing something that says, wow, I remember back in the day when there was a thing called a CARBUERTOR and we were working on them and look at where we've grown to. It's a great idea. I love it. Clean up your act. That's really what you're saying. Jeff, how about you? You can't manage what you don't track. Tip number two.
For a lot of years, I used to do the memory game where I would try to remember, hey, what's our top three or five or six key point indicators? And then as we started to grow our staff up front, especially in the shop, you get more than 2, 3, 5, 10 employees. It's so very important to teach people to manage what they have. And so for us, you know, gross profit dollars, average RO, those things are super fun to talk about. But if you can't manage it and track it, expectations aren't clear. So it seems very, very simple. It's something we heard from a coach one time, but we ingrained it into all of our employees and our processes is like, hey, we're going to track this so we can manage it. We're not going to track it to be punitive or to use it as a weapon against our employees. What we're going to do is we're going to need to be very selective in what we track and why we manage it. It's expectations are, it's hard to disappoint somebody if expectations are clear. So that's kind of where we go with tracking our numbers. That's how we want to manage it.
I mean, I heard the word discipline in there. I mean, I've got a to-do list that I print every week with a check-down list. And even though this last week I didn't do it really well, you ask Tracy, she'll say, "Dad, you forgot." But anyway, it keeps you confined. And I love that, Jeff. I think it's so important to be able to have the structure just in case you have a little brain fade for the week. The older you get, I don't know about you, Tom, but it seems to happen. He's laughing. He's
yeah, like, the older you get, the worse it gets. So always remember that.
Thank you. Tip number two, Jeff. Appreciate that. You can't manage what you don't track. Russ, number three, don't spend your time making $100 decisions when there are $1,000 decisions to be made. It's brilliant.
I heard that from a coach that I was working with, and reading different books, that same message just pops up all the time. Empower your team to make those decisions that you really shouldn't be wasting your time on. It's taking your focus away from your ultimate goal. So focus in on the bigger decisions and don't waste your time making decisions that your team can really be making and empowering themselves to grow with the company.
I so agree with you. It's like, what do they say? Don't worry about the paper clips, right? Worry about the pack of paper. There's some kind of great cliche when it comes to that. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. We're rolling along really well, and I love where this is going, so I appreciate this. Tom, number four for you is onboarding 101.
Isn't that cool? 20 years ago, if you would have said onboarding, people would say, what is that? It has something to do with a boat or plane. So we've come up with that over the past few years. And, you know, now we have onboarding and hopefully you get your ducks in a row. You got this onboarding program, et cetera, et cetera. But sometimes you go back to old school. And what I suggest you do for the first week, or maybe it's a few days, depending on what you want to do, is when that new employee comes in, give them a legal pad and a pen and say, okay, you're going to be doing what this person does, or maybe these two people, you're going to be doing what they do. So all I want you to do, I'm going to introduce you, everybody, follow them around, take notes, ask questions, observe, and that's all I want you to do. Just learn everything you can about what they do. And then you get into week two, or however far down the road you are, you get into your formal onboarding process. But what's happened now is probably two-thirds of your formal onboarding process is no longer necessary because they've learned all that stuff already. It's much more fun. It's less boring. And all we got to do now is kind of clean up the act with some of the details that maybe didn't get covered. So old school, simple, but very effective.
Tom, would you ever go over that list with the new person?
Go over which list?
The list, the yellow pad that they wrote things down.
Oh, a lot of people would. I probably wouldn't know. I'm not the greatest people manager in the world. I would say learn this stuff. And if I'm putting them with people that are doing their job well, then they'll probably figure it out. One thing you figure out the older you get is there's, how do they say, 10 or 20 or 30 ways to skin a cat. And, you know, it applies to technicians too. You go out there and you watch a technician do a brake job and you go, oh my God, I would never do it like that. But then on the other hand, and his work never comes back. The customers are always happy. And it's kind of like, I probably ought to just stay away from him when he's doing brake job. And the same thing applies to service advisor manager. You give them the goal. Here's what I want you to accomplish. Are we being profitable? Is everybody reasonably happy? Are we doing everything legal and honestly? Then don't get too involved with the details. So that's me.
Jeff, Russ, my think is you have this yellow pad and all these ideas, thoughts. You may learn something from what this person observed that's so evident on his face, but not on yours.
I think being in business and just operating for as long as some of us have, we get set in our ways and we know this particular way works. So this is how we're going to do it. And I think sometimes we fall short on the fact that somebody may be able to do it better and it may be more efficient. And for us, I think as owners and leaders, sometimes that could be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, I like that, Russ. I think that we do a working interview. It's usually 6 hours before we make the final offer. And hopefully some of that stuff is asked too, like, you know, why are you doing this? And it's a good familiarity thing. And I have to remind myself as an owner that it's not my job to teach somebody everything I think they need to know. We need to get them into working in their giftings and personalities, and we need to have a little bit of latitude. So something I'm working on for sure.
Jeff, number five, customer referral programs.
Yeah, this long time ago, obviously we did when we first started door hangers and we tried everything you could. But what really helped us out was on our business cards, we just have a referral program that's really simple for the customer. They can refer somebody that's like-minded, lives in their neighborhood, takes care of the things like they do. They get a certain dollar amount off the new customer, $50, and then person referring gets like a $25 credit. And why I thought that was important wasn't so much our process is when I rely too much on the marketing that I pay for, all the stuff that I push and want these high results, return on investment. One thing, when it's not working, the marketing companies we hire will say, well, how are they doing with the referral program at the front counter? And it's a good reminder that really it's the relational side at the counter, not so much the program, but are we talking to people about furthering our database by people they know? Referral programs are a really simple process. It's an incentive for somebody to get a little bit off their repair when they come back, our existing customer, but it reminds us again that it's really about relational with customers so they trust us. And then we want them to refer people that are like-minded. So it was a good reminder this week, actually, for me.
I like the like-minded whole piece. You're always trying to find the people that are willing to love you just like the other ones do. Tom, referral program at all? Do you do one?
No.
Okay. Russell, do you do a referral?
Yeah, we do. Similar to what Jeff has there. Our customers on the back of our card, it says referred by. So when it comes back in, we give them some sort of a discount. Certainly, there's room for growth there and to build on that referral program. But we do get customers that come back in, you know, word of mouth, people passing cards around and they bring them in. And it's got the customer's name who referred them coming back through the door. So at minimum, we're giving them a call and saying, hey, thanks so much for sending this person in. We really appreciate it.
Super duper. Hey, number six, Russ, this goes to you. And I have to tell you something. I just hung up the phone an hour ago with a great friend of mine on this very topic. And tip number six is be the dumbest person in the room.
Over the last couple of years, I've been very blessed to be put in positions around some really, really brilliant people. It's an overwhelming and uncomfortable feeling when you walk into a room and people are talking about things that you don't understand. But what a great place to learn, right? If you're the person in the room who's sharing all the ideas and giving so much advice, there's not a whole lot of room to learn. And this is a topic that's talked about a lot, but it's rarely practiced, I think, where it's okay to feel uncomfortable being in a room full of a ton of smart people and that have different ideas than you do. Kind of goes back to what we were talking about before when you're interviewing people and they have different ways of doing things. You know, I want to be the one that's learning from people. It doesn't mean don't share your experiences and your successes, but no, certainly look to be around people that are just crushing whatever they're working on and learn from them as much as you can.
It's really good, Russ. I love that. We just came back from something, a conference, and I remember some feedback from some people that attended, and a couple of them right away shared about it. It was kind of cool, but I didn't really get much out of it. And I just thought to myself without sharing anything, like I didn't have enough paper to write down the stuff that I learned from some people that just had some brilliant ideas. And again, unless you put yourself in that situation constantly, then you're kind of what we call a selective learner, right? You get to choose when you learn instead of just a lifelong learner. So I like that, Russ.
So something to kind of piggyback off of that, Jeff, is I've noticed that happening a lot at conferences, right? We go to conferences to learn, but if you were a fly on the wall in a lot of these rooms when conversations are going on, it's people talking about how great they're doing and the things that are going on and how they're so successful. Meanwhile, there's a reason why they came. They came to learn something, but instead of just being humble or vulnerable, right, to say, yeah, I'm really not doing that well, and just asking, how do I do it better? We tend to go to the side of, hey, let me tell you how great I am or what I'm doing really well. So I would encourage people, be humble, be vulnerable. It's okay. You know, everybody's there to learn. That's why you're going to those conferences.
Let me share a little tip that has everything to do with this. If you're going to a conference and you have that ego, as Russ and Jeff just described, and you want to play with toning it down, because a lot of times ego gets in the way of where you really are in this world. We know that. We absolutely know that to be true. The people with the high egos don't get what we're saying. But what if you said to somebody, hey, I'm doing really well, but I need help with? And so you've got your ego thing going, I'm doing really well, but I need help with recruiting. Because if you're doing really well, then you must be doing really well in the 80 things that you have to pay attention to every day. And that can't be true. So I love it.
If you're sitting at your computer and you're in some kind of meeting, it's very simple. You just put a sticky note up there that says, shut up.
Exactly right.
I'm serious. Because I guarantee I'm the worst one in the room here on this topic. Or if you're out there public, you just put one of the rubber bands, you know, like Tucker has around his wrist, and you just has see that thing there, and you know that thing means shut up. Or you can take a pen and write it on your wrist. People ask you what the SU stands for. You can play a little game with yourself and make a rule. I can answer questions and I can ask questions, but I cannot volunteer information. Try that sometime.
Listen to learn. That was from Russ, be the dumbest person in the room. And Tom, for you, tip number 7 has to do with clocks. And oh, by the way, Tom, I so agree with this because wherever I walk in the office, from studio to office, there are clocks everywhere because I do live on a time constraint.
Use clocks is one thing that you can do. Now, what we do is we have digital clocks. And if it's in an office area, service advisor area, something like that, say about 16 inches wide, about 8 inches high, big digital letters, and just have them right just above the computer screen on the wall. So you don't have to look at the clock. You automatically see the clock all the time. Back in the shop, you can pick a couple of strategic spots where anybody is either looking or very easily can look at it. And those are about 36 inches wide. Those are massive, big digital clocks put high up on the wall so they can see them over the lifts. And just, again, so everybody is conscious of time. And I point out, we're not trying to hurry anybody up, but we're making you conscious. You know, we've all done, what time is it? Oh my gosh, time got away from me. Well, this keeps time from getting away from you. And also the ones in the shop, I always make sure I get the ones with the second hands, because, you know, there's various procedures that you do on cars nowadays with 10 seconds, 15 seconds. This is really convenient. They don't have to go pull out their phone or look at something else. They can just glance up there on a wall and just time it as they go. So it's just a little efficiency thing, but, you know, as inexpensive as that is, the money that you can make in a year by getting a few extra hours pays for it real fast.
Brilliant idea. I wrote down, time is an important reference. And to me, I think as everything goes through our head, time is one of them. And if we can be reminded of where we are our day, I think it just makes for a smoother day. Personally, it does for me. Number 8, Jeff, this is from you. Train, tolerate, or terminate?
Yeah, this is from the book of Jeffrey. When I'm struggling with an employee of, have I encouraged, have I held accountable? And it's when I start to get confused, really, not so much share those 3 words with them, but what am I really doing? And hopefully I'm in a position of training, but when I start to tolerate the behavior or the poor performance or attendance or whatever it is, then actually I don't get to move back to the train anymore. I'm not really being a part of the solution to help somebody change their behavior. I'm just tolerating it. And typically the whole team suffers at that point. So I have to try to embrace that and understand, hey, I need to drift back over into training somebody instead of tolerating, hold them accountable. And then obviously, if that doesn't work out, it's termination, not so much pulling somebody aside and saying you're fired. It's like getting to that point of like, I'm done training and tolerating. It's time to move on. And nothing personal, but it's mainly for me to remind myself I've been living and tolerate so long with somebody on one subject or more that I'm either refusing to train or I'm not really wanting to terminate. So it's been a really good tool for me.
Hey, stop guessing and get working on the next car or the opportunity to buy a second shop. Now, once you can see through the fog of numbers coming at you all day, you use less brain power to make better decisions. Start with reading the gauges on every bay and every tech with Shopware's capacity dashboard. Now, it makes it easy to see where you can squeeze in one more repair. Then get an overview of every business metric in your shop. Build your reports your way so the numbers that drive you jump out at you whenever you need them. Even if you add more shops to your operation, all the numbers end up consolidated by location or any way you want to slice and dice them. You're in control every step of the way, customizing as you go. Get a clear view. Get more profits. Get Shopware.com. As the trusted aftermarket brand for over 100 years, Delphi Technologies is by your side for every step of the repair process. The Delphi journey doesn't stop once the parts are ordered. Wherever your journey takes you, our quality parts gives you ease of mind when getting your customer's vehicle back on the road. Technicians know and trust Delphi as a quality brand. Each product undergoes rigorous testing to not only meet OE standards, but also enhance it in each opportunity. From 700 hours of spray testing on chassis components to fuel pumps tested for reliability up to 150,000 miles, and safety and reliability is paramount to help vehicles drive cleaner, better, and further throughout their lives. Delphi is also committed in developing products and services to prepare technicians for the future. Take advantage of how-to videos on YouTube, technician-led trainings, and our technical support line, and more. Turn to the aftermarket parts supplier with over 100 years of OEM trust and quality. Learn more about Delphi. Visit DelphiAftermarket.com. Number nine, Russ, embrace the suck.
Yeah, so this I heard, I believe it was from Jocko Willink, he's a former Navy SEAL. They have to go through this thing called Hell Week, and it's sleep deprivation, incredible training, and these recruits are pushed to their absolute limit. And I think we all as business owners go through times where we're doing great, we're flying high, and then all of a sudden something smacks you in the face. You have no idea what just happened, and you've just got to get through the situation. The other thing that I like to remember too is when I'm going, and I recently just had this happen, I'm going through a situation, and instead of just sitting and relishing on the fact that this has happened to me, just get through it, push through it, show your team you can get through it, and pick them up and walk through the storm. I had a very close friend call me and he said, be the buffalo. I said, what do you mean? He said, be a buffalo. So buffalo, when a storm's rolling in, the buffalo walk through the storm. They don't run from it like other animals so that they can get to the other side faster. They don't have to deal with it as long. Instead of wasting energy running away from the problem or talking about the problem, put your energy into getting through the problem and getting out the other side.
Very good. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Tom, tip number 10, I need to know now.
This one, it takes a little bit of effort, but the cool thing about it is very few people will do this. Very, very few. It's just too much to overcome. If you try emailing for services nowadays, whether you want a lawn service or snowplow, you go ahead, pick 10 places and email them and ask them for some kind of information. In the first place, one will respond within an hour, two will respond within the next day, three will respond by the weekend, and the other four you will never hear from. That's why I tell people if that's how you handle it, like the last people on your website, just take your website down because you know all you're doing is, as Witt used to say, all you're just pissing people off, and don't spend money to piss people off. You can piss them off for free. But every contact that you get, the way I have it written on here, phone, email, website form, chat, text, in person, and carrier pigeon, treat every one of those like a ringing phone. You answer it now. You don't answer it, I'll check the emails on the weekend. No. The customer, if they want to know about getting a car in for maintenance now, they don't want to know an hour from now. They'd like to know now. They did use email. They could have called. But a lot of people, they're just not, especially younger people. They're not verbal nowadays. They're digital. That's how they do things. So when they contact you, they expect you to reply. I mean, they understand you may not reply for an hour or so. But if you're the guy that the shop that replies back within 30 to 60 minutes, your chances of getting that job are really good. You're just going to blow the competition away because after 24 hours, they've got one option, you, because nobody else has replied yet. They might as well just have you do it. I mean, it reflects on apparently these people are paying attention to what's going on. So they'll do the same thing with my car. So all the forms of contact, you get somebody on them and you don't have to say, well, how do I answer all the questions in the email? You don't have to answer the questions. All you got to do is email them back and say, hey, Bill, I'll check on that and get back to you later today. Now you're good. Now he's waiting. He knows that you saw it. You're on the ball. So all these things respond somehow immediately, and you're just going to get more people come in, especially new customers.
Who can shake that away? Perfect. I need to know now. We've done shows on millennials that want to have an appointment or a discussion over the website. And when it is not replied, you know, through their mobile phone in a certain amount of time, you've been kicked off the list. You're no longer in the family, even though they didn't know you. You're a goner. It's a great point, Tom.
You're slowly running into more and more people who you may say, you know, yeah, they've been a customer here for about a year now, and they've spent about $2,500. Have you ever talked to them? No, I've never heard their voice. They've never heard mine. This is an extreme example, but people are going that way. Everything's digital. And some people, they prefer it that way. So if they prefer it that way, remember, we should do things the way customers prefer them, not for our convenience.
And you need to find that out. What's their preferred method of communication? I agree. Thank you. Number 11, Jeff, always be building the bench.
Yeah, I think our success 4 or 5 years ago was based on a team that we had, but we never really looked at what would it look like to double our success or increase it by 50% or 25? Would it be the same team? And what we found is it's not. It's not the same team. So building the bench, building the dream team isn't about replacing people. It's minimizing the amount of time I'm going to spend when somebody does quit or needs to move on or something happens. And then I only got, 2 weeks to find somebody, instead of constantly being in a state of hire, building the bench and resources. It's really more of a controlled thing. It's kind of an owner preservation method. So I don't feel anxious, and I can also not react out of need. I can react out of, what are we really trying to do? Are we in a state of growth? We're in a state of growth. That's where we're at. So building the bench makes a lot of sense to me. Eventually, we're going to need another technician instead of replacing one that quit. I think that's where I want to be. But we have two going on now. We have somebody that's put their notice in, is going to be vacating a seat. And then also we're adding a different position in the shop that will be in addition to the employees we have. So it's two different ways of doing it, but it's the same method of, I need to build the bench. We don't try people out. We really try to really get to know them and find out all the things that we want in our culture and experience level before we just throw people in. I'm glad we waited. We got a great A-level tech coming on, another one. And it really does work that we had already been going through this for several months. And then all of a sudden, now we have a need. So somebody taught us that really recently. And so now I guess I'm a hiring manager instead of an owner. I never thought I'd ever say that. But it's kind of fun when you figure out all the bells and whistles that are out there with some of the programs. And so I don't feel rushed. That's my tip. I don't feel rushed. I feel like I can make a great decision on our culture. And then lastly, what I'd like to say, what it produced was the team actually would say things, hey, when you get it narrowed down, can we meet the person first? I'm like, yes. So now we have buy-in. It's just fantastic.
I love what he said. Now I'm a hiring manager. You know your role. I mean, every hour of the day, sometimes we get different roles. Very good. That's a $1 million tip. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Russ, you're next. Tip number 12, approach every situation with the intent to learn.
I think this one has become very relevant for me over the last couple of years. So I have a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and an 8-month-old. And when you have a couple toddlers running around and some of the things that they do, you're just asking yourself, why? Like, why are you doing this? And, you know, before you go and drop the hammer, you know, well, you shouldn't do this, I started asking the question, why did you do this? And it's pretty interesting the responses I'll get, especially from my toddlers. Well, I just wanted to see what would happen if I poured this down the drain, or if I did this to something around the house, or playing with tools in the garage, something like that. But it got me thinking, like, when you're now talking with team members, or you're talking with other business owners, or you're talking with leaders in your community, really approaching every situation, whether it be a good situation or a bad situation, having to terminate someone because of something that happened, really trying to dig in and figure out why they made the decisions they did. And I think it helps us listen more than talk and really get inside their heads and allows us to approach future situations differently. So you can kind of see a pattern forming and you know, hey, well, this person did this last time before this ultimate situation happened. Let me try and jump in there now and use the information I learned last time to figure out where their head's at now and how I can help avoid problems in the future. Really, it's just coming down to focusing on that, listen more than you talk, and trying to learn something from a conversation that you're having with any person in your life or business or whatever it is. I think trying to learn something during those conversations is imperative to success in the future.
I love that. The whole why thing, I think, has become such a critical piece of great leadership today. Of course, Simon Sinek wrote the book, Start With Why. And to your point about trying to be a better listener, a week ago, I told someone, okay, so you've got to go into an important meeting and maybe uncomfortable. So I said to them, did you ever watch NCIS? And they said, sure, I have. And I said, just be Gibbs. So think about that as a management tool. Just be Gibbs, meaning he's the lead character. He probably has, 40 words in an hour show, right? Because he looks at you. He never responds. You think you know what he's saying, but he's taking it in. He's formulating it. And maybe he says 5 words later that sums up what someone could have said in a paragraph earlier, right? So he's really a good listener to a point where he's always assessing a situation. So always be Gibbs.
I want to say something what Russ said there. I do that. I'll say why, but but maybe not like in a really considerate way, maybe sometimes. But my wife reminded me that that puts people on defensive, and I fundamentally disagree with it, right? In my head, like I just disagree with it. But here's what came out of it, Russ. She says, can you say, help me understand what your thought process was? And I'm like, this is too complicated. Can't I just say why? And she says, well, it actually probably will disarm you. And I'm like, okay, good. So just now toddler, hands off. It's just why. You know, we don't have time to hold them, coddle them, and teach them it's okay to do all that. We just want to say why.
So why equals help me understand.
Yeah. Or she would say, can you please help me understand, which is a very kind way of doing it. So I'm in training also.
Yeah. To Jeff's point, specifically in business, if you have a team member or something that's made a mistake, we can have a tendency to get really upset and mad, and we're going in there ready to address a situation. But really, if our mindset is to try and understand how that happened, I think that's super important, because in today's business world, we're trying to build leaders, right? We want people in our companies to lead and take that next step forward. And if the first thing that we do is, you know, try and drop the hammer or crush them when a mistake's been made, because that's the way we are about ready to handle it. If we go into that conversation trying to understand what happened and where their mindset was, it diffuses us, to your point, Jeff. I think it helps us calm down and, oh, okay, I could see why you did that. And it doesn't blow up that position of leadership that that person was trying to take potentially.
Yeah, I haven't officially tried it yet, but I'm going to work on that today, okay?
I love this. We are so much sharing all these great ideas. Thank you so much for that. 21 great tips are part four here on the podcast. Tom, you're up next. Are parts ruining your shop?
Parts seem to be the number one subject around our shop. And when we've surveyed in the past, the two things that slow the train down the most are parts and authorizations. Those are always at the top of the list. There's a bunch of other things, but there's a discussion recently on Facebook and some tech saying, well, how am I supposed to get 50 hours in a 40-hour week? And I say, well, if the front is run right, you can get 50, 55, 60, 65 hours in a 40-hour week, but the front has to be run right. All the details have to work. And the biggest problem with that is usually parts. And good thing to do is, you know, when your techs are stuck, you can have them write it down, which works kind of well. Just go back there and ask, why are you stuck? Why are you standing around? Why are you not working on it? And usually the number one answer will be parts. I'm waiting for parts. We just did an informal survey with some shops on better ways to get parts a little bit faster. We came up with a whole ton of ideas. And you should have somebody, if you're a one-man shop, you're one-man shop or two. But if you're a little bit bigger, you can have somebody who's got a dual role, parts and something else. If you're a bigger shop, you start talking about, I don't know, whatever, 7, 8, 9 employees. We should have a full-time parts person. That person will pay for themselves. They could probably buy them cheaper than the other roles that you have, to be honest with you. But their role is to track down those parts and get them there now. I want the parts now. Well, they said they'll be here tomorrow. No, I want them now. Or 2 days. Now we can't do that. And you just find all these different ways of doing it. And you really make it a focus of what's happening. And what happens if you really aggressively do that, you go 30, 60, 90 days out, all your techs are knocking down an extra 5 hours a week. So often you'll talk to shop owners and they'll say, no, I don't have that problem. I get my parts here. And I say, oh, let me hang around your shop for a day and talk to your techs. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, that's brilliant. If you're putting the pressure on your parts supplier, have them hang out with you and watch it from your side, because they've got their level of chaos and their structure and their people and their assets, their everything. And they think they're doing a great job, and they maybe are. But there could be room for improvement, and they would see it from your perspective. So invite a parts person over for the day. Take your parts supplier to work. There it is. Like, take your kid to work. Take your parts supplier to work. Brilliant. Thank you, Tom. Number 14, Jeff, goes to you. Always inspect what you expect.
Setting clear expectations is obviously part of the job, and things are in place. Normal day starts to unfold, and a couple of days get away from you, and you find out something's off with numbers or production, or Tom was saying parts, something like that. And then there's a, hey, we got to try to correct it. And what we found is, it's like we put things in place for the performance-based people to inspect everything that they're doing anyway. How are we doing? Tracking sheets, those kind of things. They're not laborious. They're designed to put us in a position where the numbers are the boss. They help dictate our next move sometimes. And for me, though, when I do my audits in the morning, especially, I take a random 5 or 10 from each person, just kind of go through them. They usually check out good. But when they don't, I have to see, hey, are we still clear on our expectations? Because we're inspecting this. We're really all on the same team. It's not so much your performance is low as like, hey, is everything okay? And it could be just like what Tom says. Yeah, we can't get parts from the supplier that we always get parts from. It's like, great. Well, because we've been inspecting this expectation, you know, in a short period of time, we can address it sooner without a big blow up. And that way, when we start looking at numbers at the end of a pay period, there's not this big shock because we've been inspecting this all the way. We've really been talking about it, clearly communicating. It's not so much like squeezing every penny or profit out of every decision. It's really the opposite of that. It's really just understanding, hey, this is an expectation, which means we're going to inspect this constantly.
It sounds so critical to decisions that are made when you're not around. You know, what would Jeff do in this particular case? Because I know he's going to catch it and come to me. So there's a lot of people that will go do that extra thing or do actually the job that they were required to do because they know you're inspecting that stuff. Great, great point. And we've done shows on work order audits. In fact, Jeff, thanks for reminding me. I think we need to have another panel discussion on that because it does change. And for a brand new group of listeners that we get all the time, it would be nice to share that with them. So thank you. You are going to be on that show, right?
Yeah, let me check my calendar.
Number 15, Russ, get involved with your neighborhood.
Yeah, I think this is huge. If you really want to know the pulse of what's going on around you, get involved with your neighborhood. Get involved with your chamber of commerce, find a nonprofit that's in your area and join. I started doing this a long time ago and really my passion is helping people. It's what I really love to spend my time doing. I've gotten my team involved now. So we're doing projects as a team. We're getting involved, cleaning up signs, helping out with food pantries, things along those lines. But the connections that you make in those nonprofits or in your community when you're doing these projects will pay you back tenfold in the future, whether it's you're looking to put an addition on your building or you're looking for a newer client base, fleet accounts, things along those lines. When people see you out there in the community helping and making a difference in the place that you operate your business or you live, they want to be around you. They want to support you. You're supporting the town that supports you. So I think it's huge. And I think ultimately, you know, in the state we're in kind of as a country, people getting involved and trying to make a difference in their communities is just going to pay us back dividends. So I highly encourage people to get involved with chambers, nonprofits, food pantries, anything along those lines. It's real feel good stuff. And what you're doing for your community and for those people in need is huge.
Russ, how far do you stretch out? Is it a 3, 4, or 5 mile radius?
So I'm actually the president of a nonprofit here, and we stretch out probably 20 miles in our county. So we heavily focus in our county. In the town where my shop is, we're a 1 square mile town, but there's a lot of surrounding areas that all of these people kind of interact within this area of, I'd say, 5 to 10 miles. But the outreach that we have working with one organization in particular, we go and harvest corn and crops and fruits and things, and those are dispersed throughout, I think, 4 or 5 different states. So the effort that we're putting in as a team is now being dispersed amongst 5 different states to help families in need. So the outreach is incredible. It's huge.
But the reason that you're doing this is the first community, you want to give back. And thirdly, it can benefit your stature in the community as a businessman.
So in the community, the charity that I work with, that I'm the president of right now, we do a lot of work with the city councils and different mayors and different constituents of our county. As a businessman, I'm now able to have conversations. If I'm looking to put a shop somewhere else in the county, I have depth. I can have conversations to know what I can and can't do. And it's an informal conversation. So I'm not going before a board. I'm able to have those conversations prior to having to go to the board to know how to set myself up for success. So in a way, being involved with your community will pay you back because of the relationships that you're building with the people that are operating your community.
Well said. You don't do it for selfish reasons. You do it because you have a big heart.
You hear the objections out there from people watching saying, I don't have enough hours in my day already. My wife already yells at me because I spend too much time related to the business. And I agree with everything Russ said. I don't disagree with any of it, unless you're a one-man shop. You do have employees. And who's the most personable, presentable person in your shop? Now, it could be a tech, could be a manager, tech service advisor. Ideally, it's your number one service advisor. And sign them up. There's stuff that are more business direct, like BNI, for instance. Get some or all of your employees, get them involved in that kind of stuff when you don't have the time to do it.
Tip number 16, it comes from Tom. It's a Johnny Nash song, Tom. I think Johnny Nash wrote those lyrics. I can see clearly now.
This is talking about getting away from the shop. And I mean, getting away from the shop. And you can do it next week. You don't have to plan a lot to do this. We have technology nowadays. You pack up your stuff and whatever your favorite vacation spot is or getaway spot, pack all your stuff up and go there and run the shop from there for the next 30 days. I mean, you've got cameras, you've got Slack, we'll get to that in a minute. You've got all kinds of communication. You can do all this stuff. It's just like being in your office at the shop, except the office is 1,500 miles away or whatever it is, and run everything from there. And you're going to get a good overview of things. You're going to help cure your micromanagement because it's very difficult to micromanage things when you can't walk out there and stick your nose in whatever's going on. And you just begin to get a clearer view of everything. Everybody talks about the 30,000 foot view or whatever nowadays. You can look it all over without being in the middle of it. You're not interrupted. You'd be amazed how much stuff you can get done. I get a week's worth of stuff that I had to do in the office and shop and get that done today at a remote office. We have a couple of them. And also what'll happen here, and this is one of the weirdest things about it, is you do this, and then you come back and that month was your most profitable month in 2 years because you got out of the way and just let them do their job if you got good people. So anyway, give it a try. It's a lot of fun and you'll enjoy it. You kind of get ready for a lot of fun things you can do in the future.
We've heard that story over and over again. And there's still people saying, I think Tom's nuts. Okay.
Yeah, it's legitimate.
It is. But I think you have to get ready. You have to prepare. I think there's a lot of mental preparation. Team preparation.
It has so much to do with people. And if you think of, oh, this is for the old farts that run shops. No. You can do this if you're 25. This is a new habit to get into of running your shop remotely, because hopefully someday you'll do that anyway. But this is going to give you a view of the shop you've never had before.
Number 17 from Jeff. Spend intentional time every working day to plan, learn, and manage.
Obviously, most of us start off with spending 90% of our time managing, and then we can't get out of the way because we're not spending intentional time planning or learning. And the goal is to look at, I want to spend most of my time learning. That's what I'd rather do. Learning how to be, a better leader, better dad, better husband, better business person, and then implementing those plans, especially from far away in a nice place. And then managing, but would be my accountability side of ultimately, the buck stops with me with the business and the decision, especially financially. I have a responsibility to spend intentional time managing it. But I want to get that flipped around to where I'm learning more than some planning and then some management. So that somebody showed me on a pie chart one time, and then you had to fill in where you were. And I don't even know if I could see any of the learning side for a while, but so now I'm intentionally doing that where managing, I want to spend a minimal amount of time managing. I want to spend most of my time equipping people during that time. And then I definitely love to learn so I can plan. So yeah, somebody showed me that recently and I just love it.
Great advice, Jeff. Thank you so much. Tip number 18 is coming from Ross. This is really cool. Can't wait to hear about this one. Wear a bright jacket or a loud shirt. Look at Tom.
Yeah, I love it. I couldn't wait to talk about this because I need to get one of those shirts Tom has. So this became really evident to me a number of years back. I was at an awards banquet and I had this super bright yellow linen jacket. And I love the jacket. I had so many people come up from across the state and just talk to me because they said, I love your jacket. Where are you from? That conversation starts, right? So I think the big picture here is don't be afraid to stand out, okay? I love wearing loud jackets really because people will come up and talk to you and great conversations are had. Great friends are made. You get to work through some of those things that you may have been struggling with trying to in your business or personal life. And just from having a conversation with someone, and it all started because you had a really bright shirt on or jacket or something along those lines. you know, I think that paired with the intent to learn from a conversation is just huge for personal growth and business growth. But yeah, I love wearing these bright jackets, loud coats when I'm playing golf, the loudest pants out on the golf course, because it opens up conversations and it's fun. You don't have to work hard to make that happen. People just are naturally drawn to bright colors. That's why school buses are yellow and stoplights are red, right? People want to pay attention to that. So there is a caveat, though, when you're wearing these bright jackets or loud shirts, people are watching what you're doing and paying attention to your movements. So make sure that you're carrying yourself in a way that's honorable to not only yourself, but your company and your family. So get noticed. It all kind of also backs up to your brand. You really are the face of your brand. So it's okay to stand out. We want our websites and our social media and stuff to stand out. Well, you're part of that. So stand out. Have somebody ask you, where'd you get the jacket from? And let the conversation go from there.
I love it. Thank you for that, Russ. Tom, number 19, a $250 marketing tour of your shop.
I see more shops doing this now, but a lot of them, I'm sure, haven't thought about it. And if you've gone on a real estate site anytime in the last, I don't know, 5, 10 years, they have virtual tours of the house where you can click on that thing and you can go through all the house, all the rooms, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you just call one of those people, maybe more of them do it for business nowadays, but I just called these real estate guys that do this and they came out to the shop and they did the same thing in the shop. And they just went through every corner of the shop, inside, outside, et cetera, and put it together in a virtual tour. And it's a couple minutes longer. And you can go, you know how they are. You can go from room to room yourself. So you go with wherever you want to go and look at whatever you want to look at. And you hook that up with Google and your website and Google Maps, so on and so forth. So people can actually sniff the place out and look inside and see what's all going on there before they come. And I think they're a little bit more comfortable when they do that. And it runs about $250. Last time the guy threw in some drone shots with it too. He went up above. So just a good way of marketing. You were talking about video earlier, and this is kind of sort of video, but inexpensive and easy to recoup the cost.
No doubt. A friend of ours, Patrick Egan, does this professionally for you and costs a little bit more than that, but because he interviews you and your customers, but really a great, great idea. Tom, we're going to give you number 20, Slack.
I think more and more shops have it nowadays. If you don't have Slack or the equivalent, maybe there's a good equivalent out there. I just am not aware of it, but Slack is the one that people are familiar with, slack.com. I'm not sure who named it, but anyway, it's worth checking out. Very cool tool. And we do virtually 98% of our inter-shop communication is done with Slack. It's done with channels. It's done with chat and talking back and forth to each other. And it makes life so much easier. All the information that we put on there, all these things, how do you keep track of this? We have the pay version of it, which means you can go back to the beginning when you first had it. So we put policies and procedures on there so you can look them up on your Slack channel, because it goes back and you can just search it and find the history. We put all kinds of fun stuff on there. When are people going to have time off? So all the vacations are on there. Loaner cars are on there. Standard SOPs are on there. RV assignments, so we get them fairly. Training announcements are on there. Reviews. Once a week, we take all the reviews that have come in for our shop and we put it in the reviews Slack channel so everybody in the shop can read the reviews. But there's so much advantage to it. If you haven't tried it, check it out, or hopefully you have something equivalent. It just makes life so much easier.
Thank you for that, Tom. I use Slack in my business too. It is a heck of a really nice communications tool between me and my team and people from the outside of the industry that use Slack. We can be part of that too. And I'm going to take tip number 21, and it's Carm's tips. And I'm going to kind of stay in the same vein that Tom is in with some certain apps like Today's Class, which is a great piece of software for your technicians to have perpetual training. Also, Mentor Mentee, another great way to assess when you're going to build yourself an apprentice program or a new person coming in. You do assessments for mentors and mentees and find the right fit there. Also, ASE Renewal is an app on your phone, so that you can have a perpetual renewal thing. And finally, Grammarly, Microsoft To Do, and Canva are other really good apps. Please look them up. You'll probably find some great Canva for marketing, Microsoft To Do to keep you aligned in the things you have to do. It's really cool. At the end of the day, you can just open it up on your phone and actually check some of the things that you actually had to do. You can set up different folders. You can have a different kinds of to-dos. And the ASE Renewal app, I just think it's so cool not to have to worry about getting to a test center when you can do that. Guys, I know your time is so valuable. This was great. A ton of great stuff here. I have to tell you, this was one of those multi-million dollar episodes where there's so much precious information here that I think we may overload the brains of our listener, but it'll all be in the show notes so you can go in there and get it. Russ, anything finally you'd love to say?
To the people listening out there, this is why it's recorded. You can go back and just take a piece at a time, right?
And next Thursday, the audio and the video will release out on our YouTube channel. Of course, you can go back to all the social medias and watch this over the weekend. Tom, I'll give you the next last word. Anything?
Tag on to what you said. We've had today's class almost since its inception. One of the best values of anything you can purchase as a shop owner would be today's class. Fantastic product. We love it.
Jeffrey, I'll give you the last word.
Yeah, I would just say ask for help when you need help and then plan to take notes. But the big thing is grab somebody when you're asking for help. You hold you accountable. You can't lead without being led effectively. We all had to learn this somewhere, and it doesn't work to ask for help, but then not implement the suggestions. So once you make that mind shift, you ask for help more, and then you end up asking for help less because you've actually done the things you're supposed to do.
Thank you so much. Tom Hamm, Jeff Grassman, Russ Crosby, thank you so much. Well worth the listen. A lot of great stuff here, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.